Let's resume.
First, I want all of you to remember your sympathetic activation because you've now eaten, and it's going to be postprandial stupor. I promise not to snore in the microphone if you promise not to snore out there.
Rick and I will try to overcome our prejudice against people in the back. And it's not that we're really prejudiced. There's this distinction in diversity work between intent and impact. You know, our intent is neutral or benign, but our impact is to not see you, to call on you for questions and stuff. And a couple people with great right speech, which was very impressive, pointed that out to us. And so I'll try to be better about calling on people in the back, you know, for questions or comments in general. What I'd like to do right now is to do sort of a background foundational statement about the place for concentration in Buddhist practice, and I think broadly in the upper reaches of human potential and certainly in contemplative practice. And so to that end, you may well know that it's said that in Buddhism there are three fundamental pillars of practice, sila, samadhi, and panya. In Pali, the language of early Buddhism, sila translates, as Rick said earlier, into morality or virtue, restraint, moral conduct, non-harming. The essence of sila is not harming others or oneself. Second pillar of practice being samadhi, concentration, including non-ordinary states of awareness, as well as more ordinary states of mindfulness, the sustained moment-to-moment presence in our own experience. And then there is, of course, panya, which means wisdom, insight, wise view, understanding, recognizing that things change, recognizing causes, the causes of suffering, the causes of happiness, and so forth. So the one pillar we're going to dive into now in particular is concentration, which is just one of the three pillars. Many people have written or said, me included, that the concentration pillar of practice has probably been underrepresented to some extent as Buddhism has come to the West, and there's a growing recognition that it's an important pillar of practice to really develop, this steadiness of mind, including an openness to non-ordinary states of awareness, such as the four jhana states, which constitute the right concentration or wise concentration element of the Noble Eightfold Path. In other words, there's a place for concentration. Now, there are pitfalls with concentration because it can lead to bliss states. Also, people can get very goal-directed and kind of comparing about concentration, you know, themselves today versus themselves in the past or themselves today compared to others. All right, but there are also pitfalls with sila and panya. There are pitfalls with virtue. I'm more virtuous than them, or, I'm less virtuous than them, or wiser or less wise than they are, and so forth. So just because a path has pitfalls doesn't mean we shouldn't take the good path. It just means don't fall in the pit. Or if you fall in the pit, you know, get back on the path. Okay. So to get into this territory about concentration, I think it's helpful to define some key terms. So awareness inside the natural frame is like a kind of field in which various contents of consciousness arise and pass away. In Buddhism, certainly the Buddhism that the Buddha himself taught, consciousness or awareness was not seen as particularly special. It was seen as conditionally arising. It arose dependent upon various causes. It passed away due to causes. It was a space or field through which different contents of mind, such as sights or sounds, tastes, touches, smells, thoughts, feelings, hopes, dreams, sorrows, etc., arose and pass away. That's awareness, all right? Attention is a focus on some particular content of awareness. Mindfulness is sustained present moment awareness. It's sustained attention, very often with associated qualities of what's called metacognition, a little bit of attention to attention. Also, typically, there's an acceptance of what's in the field of awareness, because when we're fighting against what's present in awareness or trying to clutch at it, that gets in the way of this open spaciousness of sustained present moment awareness. And also typically associated with mindfulness is a quality of friendliness toward what's there, even in investigation of it. Okay? Concentration is concentrated mindfulness. Concentration is a kind of mindfulness. It's not at odds with mindfulness. Concentration can be understood in two senses of the word. One being like a light going through a magnifying glass is concentrated at a point. That's one kind. Another is like a liquid that is very concentrated. We can become very concentrated in positive qualities as we develop them. Okay? So far, so good. So, why do we have concentration? Why did the Buddha talk about it so much? Why did he train in concentration? And here's where I think a traditional metaphor is really quite helpful. We find ourselves in a forest of suffering. And over there, let's say, are the snowy peaks of deep happiness, profound inner peace, and freedom from our reactive patterns. So we need to get through the forest where we are to that place of full awakening. How do we do that? We need to make a path. The first good news is we don't have to cut down the whole forest. We just have to get out of the forest and take our seat increasingly and be rested increasingly in an awakened mind, our own fundamental Buddha nature, which I myself understand as, and I think consistent with the teachings of great teachers, I understand Buddha nature in three levels. One level being the absence of craving, which is where we go, and we are often there, we don't even notice it, when there's no basis of deficit or disturbance that knocks us off balance. All right, that's one way to understand our own Buddha nature. Perhaps a deeper way to understand it is a sense of opening out into oneness, both out into our own experience as well as out into allness altogether. That allness is Buddha nature, if you will. That's another way people write about it and talk about it. And then perhaps if it's real for you, and the Buddha himself did allude to this repeatedly in terms of the transcendental, that which is unconditioned, the deathless, that which doesn't change, unconditionality might be another way to put it. In everyday life, I think the first of those three ways to understand Buddha nature is most accessible. And so that's when we're in our Buddha nature, we're immediately transported out of the forest of suffering. But to increasingly stabilize in that Buddha nature, that's our nature, our true nature. That's our natural state. That's our resting state when we're not disturbed by deficits or disturbances that drive us to crave and therefore suffer and harm. Right? When we're rested there, we're no longer in the forest. They have a saying in Tibet, sudden awakening, gradual cultivation. Sudden awakening, gradual cultivation, sudden awakening. In other words, we might have intimations of our own Buddha nature, awakenings to it, a sense of it, just standing under the stars, or perhaps some moment on a meditation retreat or interaction with somebody else. We have some other kind of liberating or important insight. That's great. And then we need to do the cultivation that builds up the infrastructure, that wakes down, as Samuel Bonder puts it, not just wakes up. All right. So how do we do this in terms of concentration? Well, the traditional metaphor to get our path out of this forest of suffering is that we need to cut down a path. All right. Now, if you have a razor blade, it's sharp, right? And it's useful, but can you cut a path through the thickets of suffering to freedom and insight with just a razor blade? No. Or we could have in our hand something like a baseball bat, a club. We could bang on the trees, bang on the vines, and so forth. Would that get us out? Would that create a path for us? Not so good either. But if we combine the two, if we combine something that's razor sharp with something that has heft, that is the way to cut the path out of the forest of suffering to fundamental peace and freedom. Insight is like the razor blade. It's sharp, it's acute, it's discerning. But insight, the insight that's not backed up with heft, the heft of concentration, the oomph of concentration, that kind of insight doesn't have much impact. The two together are what free us the most. And that's where concentration and insight come together, samadhi and vipassana, vipassana being the word for insight. So again, it's in this frame in which the point of concentration ultimately in the Buddhist path is liberating insight. Still, concentration itself is a great means to that end. Okay? So any questions or comments so far about this kind of at a foundational level? And then we'll move fairly rapidly, thankfully, into a practice. So far, so good? Okay, one, all. Where, I need my binoculars. Okay, all the way in the back, David. We'll start over here.